Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes. Let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Okay. Not in a creepy way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight, we're going to talk about the 2001 film Ocean's 11, directed by Steven Soderbergh. This is our last movie officially, I think, of Kleptember. So, Brother Jay, was this on your list?
I believe it was. It was another one like Jackie Brown that kept coming up in my queue that I've never seen. So,
oh, okay.
I put on the list because I was like, hey, you know what? I've never seen this. Neither the original nor the remake.
And I have not seen the original either. I'm curious to see if it's available so we could maybe A-B it.
Compare, contrast, yeah. Also, now I want to watch the rest of them.
Well, okay, so as a newbie and as the person who put on the list, what's your initial thought of Ocean's 11?
I was actually, it was a fun movie. It wasn't like spectacular. It wasn't Sneakers, which is kind of, I guess, that's a pretty high bar, I suppose. But it was pretty entertaining and pretty good. It was a popcorn movie. It satisfied all of the kind of the plot points. It didn't seem too crazy stupid, and I enjoyed it. I could suspend my disbelief enough to enjoy it, but also not pick apart the plot too much because there were some issues.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I like George Clooney, as it turns out, rather a lot. Not just because he's like suave and handsome, because I'm not swayed necessarily by that, but you know he seems to be able to act pretty well. Not a huge Julia Roberts fan, but she did okay.
It wasn't really a heavy lifting Julia Roberts part either.
No, and Brad Pitt actually I thought did a decent job too, but it was an odd ensemble cast. And I don't understand the opening where most of the people were uncredited playing themselves.
Okay, there was a lot of that in this movie.
It was like a lot of stunt casting.
Yeah.
So, Edie Gourmet at one point, I believe.
Oh, yeah, Henry Silva and Edie Gourmet. And I think Edie Gourmet and Henry Silva were in the original Ocean's 11.
So, it was interesting. It was fun to watch. Having been in Vegas, it's interesting. So it was interesting to kind of see things that looked familiar-ish, although a little improbable. But, you know, it was a fun movie. It served the purpose, and it made a shit ton of money, so clearly other people liked it too. So it wasn't just me.
Well, this was an all-star cast.
Absolutely. I mean,
this was like the Poseidon Adventure of 2001.
Yes.
Okay, so let me be play devil's advocate here. Let me be maybe the Drew character. Although sure. Drew never plays devil's advocate. Drew believes everything he says, so in case anybody's wondering. In fact, Drew doesn't like people who play devil's advocate, even his eldest brother.
Because he's like, fucking commit.
Well, he just doesn't like, he. I don't, yeah, anyway. I don't want to
speak
too much for him.
Yeah, I'm looking for the sock puppet.
Yeah, he'll speak on his own. Yeah, but yeah, brother Hi. Drew. Historically, at least in my opinion, brother Drew has preferred to debate serious issues and not debate for the sake of debate. Whereas I like to debate to enrage the other person. So at least I used to as a child and young adult. Not so much anymore, because you know, it turns out pushing people's buttons isn't all that. it's just not, it's not as fun for me as it is damaging to other people, as I find out in my, after a long history of damaging other people. This sounds more dramatic. Anyway, so doctor, my week's, let me get comfortable on the couch and I'll tell you how my week's going. Okay, so what I meant to say was that Drew might suggest, or I'm going to play the character of Drew suggesting that, so Brother Jay, as someone who didn't like Fast Five, therefore is not a fan of fun, how dare you? How dare you say you had a good time watching this movie, which is pure fun? Also, does not take itself very seriously. Although, Fast Five took itself way too seriously. This movie doesn't take itself very seriously at all.
Okay, but this isn't a movie about robbing a casino that never takes place in a casino. So that's what I'm going to say about that.
Also, there isn't any fake moments of gravitas in this movie. Like, there's no, they don't want you, there's no moment where you're saying, mi familia, or somebody gonna die. Like, this is a movie where nobody gets in trouble and nobody dies, pretty much.
There's no giant safe attached to two Dodge Chargers running down the streets of Rio.
Well, but some might say that that's what this movie does not have going for it. Although this movie has more cars than were in Fast Five. Let's tangent off for a quick second into a link you sent me.
Let's veer off the rails in like 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. So, Ocean's 11.
This is what happens when there's no Brother Drew. We're all over the place.
Well, as I told Brother Drew, the thing about our Fast Five podcast might as well have been a Two Brother podcast, because there were long stretches of time where Brother Jay was napping or something. Because when I edited it, I saw the waveform, and it was like
it was just some flat page line
turning, and yeah, it was like that's about it. And occasionally you'd come in with your repartee and bon mot. I think that's I don't know.
my signature snark.
Yes. But there were long periods between that snark.
Oh, I know. I saved it up.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So you sent me a link and I will put it in the notes. By the way, do people know that there are notes? Like, if you go on your podcatcher app, I think it's Apple, but definitely all the other podcatcher apps, or if you go to the website, notinacreepyway.com, you'll find links to a ton of stuff that we talk about. And in a lot of cases, you find embedded videos and things. So add to your experience. Make it a multimedia experience. Make it today.
Not a cougar, but links.
You sent me a link to... you sent me a link to... You sent me a link to all of the cars in Ocean's 11.
Yes.
Which when I hit the button, I'm like, oh, this will be fascinating, because there was a ton of cars in this movie.
Somebody put a lot of work into that. A lot of work into it. That was a labor of love.
Well, hold on. But this is not like, let me give you a list of all the cars in the newest James Bond movie where you come up with three or four cars.
No.
This guy listed every car that was in every scene.
Yes.
Like, in the parking lot of he had lists of the 89 Toyota Corolla.
Parked on the side of the road in the scene in the corner that you could barely see the fender.
Exactly.
It is literally every car that you could discern in this whole movie.
Yeah, that's
dedication.
That's Rain Man. I mean, that's pathological. And again, more power to you. That is somebody who is committed, perhaps involuntarily committed. But we'll put the link. They drive a lot of classic cars in this movie, but if you want to know about every car in this movie.
It was fascinating to me, I thought. So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I appreciated it, but I was overwhelmed.
No, I kept scrolling down on my phone, down and down.
Oh, I know. Yes.
How long is this? And then I thought, holy crap, this is... Wow, somebody clearly, he either really liked this movie, has seen it a lot, or is really a little unnaturally obsessed with cars. Or all of the above.
That's hilarious.
I mean, yeah, who can know? I don't think I want to ask him.
Well, let's just dive into the plot. Because it's not even all that big a deal, because the... There's a lot of moving parts to the plot, but it's simply one heist.
Yeah, the plot's pretty incidental anyway.
Yeah.
because the story is less about the robbery and more about their interconnections.
Yeah, and they don't even go into a whole lot of detail about their interconnections.
That's the difference between this movie and the Fast... Yes. Whatever that...
The Fast Five.
FF movie was.
Well, yeah, you're right, because the dialogue was opposite. The whole idea of this movie, I think even in the original 60 movie, the whole idea was it was about a group of characters that had their own shorthand when speaking to one another, and they didn't explain it.
No.
They wanted it to be all legit, but they also wanted it to be not explained. Kind of like what David Mamet does. And
yeah, it didn't need to be explained because it was incidental.
Also, in context, it's like, you know, the patois of the group of people that were also involved in it.
Because the way they made the movie, they showed you what you needed to see. So you didn't need exposition.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. So we start off with Daniel Ocean, played by George Clooney, who is, he's got to be, it's funny, I think he's the most handsome man ever, but in this movie, he's not even necessarily the most charismatic character. Like, Brad Pitt is a lot more charismatic in this movie than George Clooney is.
Well, and Brad Pitt's the voice of reason in this movie.
Yeah. And the mastermind, mostly.
Which is amazing when you think about it. Every time I see Brad Pitt, though, all I see is 12 Monkeys.
In this movie, when you see Brad Pitt, all you see is him eating.
That's what I made a note specifically to that. I'm like, good God, is he eating in every scene?
He is.
And he's not. And it's not a little bit of food. It's a substantial amount of food. He's shoveling it down his gullet. Like, he's almost putting his fist into his mouth.
No, and there's a trivia that when he is in the Bellagio lobby eating shrimp cocktail, because of the reshoots on the scenes, he ate like 40 shrimp. These are big shrimp, too.
He must have had a spit bucket.
I don't know. He was eating a lot. It was hilarious. He's doing exactly what Larry Miller told you not to.
Yes.
Like, never eat in a scene because then you're committed to it for the next 30 takes. Okay, so we have Daniel Ocean, who is a convicted thief being questioned by a parole board. By the way, one of the scenes they cut was his character asking the parole board members how much money they earned. And that's because the parole board consultants said, oh no, if a prisoner ever asked that question during a parole hearing, they would be denied parole.
Okay. So they were trying to keep it semi-legit?
Yeah. So he's being questioned by the parole board about his upcoming release from prison. And he claims that the reason for his crime that he was convicted of was that he had his wife had left him and he'd gone temporarily insane.
But that's one of the movie's best lines. Well, do you think it's going to happen again? I'm like, well, I don't think she can divorce me again. Which is a little bit of brilliant repartee right there.
Yeah, yeah. See, it shows that he's sassy, but it doesn't show he's disrespectful.
Yeah, he's contrite, but he's a little biting.
Yeah. So he's paroled from the New Jersey prison, harboring dreams of revenge on a Terry Benedict, played by Andy Garcia. He is the man that stole his wife, we later find out. And Benedict owns 3 Las Vegas casinos, the Bellagio, the Mirage, and the MGM Grand. And all the casinos share one central vault, and Ocean decides he is going to take this vault. Now, the first person he recruits is the poor one out for our homie, late great Bernie Mac, who is a blackjack dealer, Frank Catton. Bernie Mac, by the way, was said in some sort of interview that his Comedians of Comedy or Kings of Comedy co-star Steve Harvey's people tried to get them to fire Bernie Mac and hire Steve Harvey instead.
Oh, I think that would have been a poor choice.
Well, it would be, and Steve Harvey has denied it because it would be rude also.
Because he's dead.
Because Bernie Mac is dead, yes. So then we're off to Hollywood where we meet Rusty Ryan, Brad Pitt, who is a weirdo. He's suave in his own way, in a quirky way, and he eats a lot. He's kind of the second in charge. Then they have to finance this thing because they end up taking a little bit over $160 million out of this vault, but they have to have someone to finance things like building the other vault, the replica vault, to practice with. They did not go into this detail in Fast Five, but if you do a little bit of the math, it cost about $20 to $30 million to pull off this job. So somebody had to put up a bunch of money. And that person is Ruben Tishkoff, played by Elliot Gould. And of all the characters, of all the actors in this movie who do a great job, Elliot Gould is a gem. He's perfect for this role.
He did an awesome job.
Oh, yeah. He just encapsulated that sort of smarmy, rich guy. Maybe a guy who was more relevant in the 70s in his own personal life. He was great. And it was his choice to smoke a cigar in every single scene. A lot of people made some character choices in this movie.
Well, but I don't think that was to their detriment.
Oh, not at all. No. People committed. So Ruben wasn't really interested at first, but they convinced him, especially because he also harbored some resentment for Benedict, because Benedict took over and is blowing up his casino.
Yeah, it was a little bit of some animosity from perhaps a little bit of was it revenge, or was it just out of meanness, or just ruthless businessman?
Oh, it was revenge. Oh, you mean the Benedict?
Yeah.
Or Ruben.
Why Ruben was knocking it down.
Benedict was knocking Ruben's old casino down. Yes.
Yes. What was the real reason that he was knocking down?
Oh, maybe just to, yeah, because just Ruben was in attendance. Yeah. So I think, yeah. So Terry was going to be a total dick, because that's what Terry is. Andy Garcia. One of the rare roles that I really like Andy Garcia in, because he plays one note, but he plays it well.
He's got a great ass. No, that's, sorry. I know, Al Pacino. But.
Andy Garcia in Godfather 3, that was an impeccable impression. They all understood. Andy Garcia in Godfather 3 could not remain on the same stage with all the classic actors playing Italians. And yet, in this movie, it works out fine, being like the ruthless, mobbed up kind of guy, because he didn't have direct competition. Although there is a connection, because of course, one of the 11 is Scott Conn, James Conn's son, who plays Turk, and his brother Virgil, played by Casey Affleck. And I thought the combination of Scott Conn and Casey Affleck in this movie was also really good. Although I don't really like Casey Affleck because of his personal life. And because he always plays the snotty, unlikable younger brother character in a lot of movies. But in this, he was fine, because he was a snotty younger brother character, I think. So, again, I don't know why.
Well, at least there was no Ben Affleck, so.
Yeah. And then we have the electronics guy, who's the sort of nebbishy guy, Livingston Dell, played by Eddie Jemison, who I don't know from anywhere. And then we have the demolitions man, Basher Tarr, played by Don Cheadle. And I didn't realize this until I did the research, but Don Cheadle is not credited in this movie.
There are a lot of people not credited in this movie.
But do you know why Don Cheadle, who is one of the titular 11, is not credited?
Why?
Because he asked for above the title crediting. And they said no.
Oh, they what's his nuts to him? They Vince Vallouf or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so, man. So then he said, he did one better than Vince Vallouf. He's like, well, then don't credit me at all. But in the next two movies, spoiler, I guess, next two movies, he's above the credits. He's above the title in his credits. So it worked out okay. Although, another thing about Don Cheadle's character, he went off to learn a Cockney accent, and because he used that silly Cockney rhyming slang, he realized, he says in interviews later, that he didn't pull off the accent very well, didn't want to use it again, but once he did it once, he was committed for the rest of the movies that he was in.
Oh, dear.
So again, don't eat the shrimp. Just hold the shrimp. Speaking of holding the shrimp, we have the Grease Man, Yen, played by Shaoba Qin, or Chin, or Zin, or whatever, however you pronounce Q-I-N, a Chinese name. who they found from the Peking Circus. He had never acted before and hasn't acted since. Although
I was going to say, if you look at his IMDb, it's the only thing he's done.
Yeah, he was working. He was considering doing stunt work after this movie, mm-hmm. but went back to the circus. Because that's where his skills lie. Then we have the old timer, Saul Bloom, played by Carl Reiner, who I love Carl Reiner. I did not actually recognize him as Carl Reiner at first.
Oh, I recognized him off the cuff, man.
Oh, he was so good.
He is. I did expect him to die, though.
Oh, yeah. They gave us that. They led us up to that belief. There's the 10. So then we have the 11th. Is a highly skilled pickpocket named Linus Caldwell, played by Matt Damon. And you got to remember a time when Matt Damon was the lowest rung of the leading man, is what I mean. Because arguably, Matt Damon is a leading man still. At the time, though, had he already done Mr. Ripley?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought all these guys did a great job.
Yeah, I don't think anybody phoned it in.
And, you know, I mean, this could be a very short episode because I don't even necessarily need to give away what they do. They do a vault heist of a casino, or in this case, three casinos, one big vault. And there's some clever things that they pull off. And there's some little bit of misdirection because we find out that that Danny Ocean's ex-wife is Tess Ocean, who's played by Julia Roberts, who is Terry Bennett's new girlfriend. So there's conflict there. And it takes place in Vegas, and so they have Lennox Lewis, who at the time was a heavyweight boxing champ, and one of the, Klitschko brothers or whatever? Drew would know how to pronounce those
names. Yeah, so you're asking the wrong person.
Yeah, who's also a Russian boxer. And then they had a bunch of stunt casting in the stands. They introduced Brad Pitt's character as somebody who's teaching actors in Hollywood how to play poker. And the actors he's teaching are Topher Grace and Joshua Jackson and Holly Marie Combs and all these people who were in television series at the time. They're all like teen actors from the time.
I don't understand that. Like, why?
Oh, because they could pull it off. They could say, hey, we have this movie that has everybody in it. Do you hot young actors want to be in it too for free or very little money?
So they just did it for the hell of it?
For the lulls, yeah.
Oh, God. Really? Did you just say that?
I think actually everybody did it a little bit for the lulls because they all took a cut. In fact, I think George Clooney sent Julia Roberts an envelope with a $20 bill attached saying, hey, I hear you get $20 for movies, you get a 20 for movies now. Talking about at the time she was making $20 million per movie. She did not make that in this movie. Because what was the budget?
It was like $80 million, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. You could not, if you paid them what they arguably deserved, you couldn't even cast this movie for $80 million. Because they had lots of cars. They took over the Bellagio for like more than a month, I think. I mean, like, they took like the full front entrance. Like, high rollers had to use the parking garage because they had blocked off the front entrance to shoot.
Yeah, but how much did they pay the Bellagio for that?
I don't know if they paid the Bellagio or the Bellagio got it as free advertising, because the Bellagio gave them lots of access to stuff. Like, the Bellagio gave them access to all that closed-circuit TV stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, that's all legitimate. I mean, obviously, the vault is not the same, but, you know.
The estimated budget was $85 million. The opening weekend was $40 million. The gross domestic was $183 million. And the worldwide was $450 million.
Yeah, that's why there have been four sequels.
No kidding. I mean, seriously. It's easy to see.
I guess three sequels. Ocean's 12, 13, and 8, right?
Sounds right.
No, and skipping a little bit to the end. They get the money, they get away, Danny Ocean goes to jail, but only for parole violation, because he really wasn't even technically, at least, he wasn't linked to being part of the robbery. And it sets up a sequel, because Terry wants to come after all these guys.
Of course.
I mean, he tells them, run.
Yeah.
When I find you, I will kill you. There is actually a funny little note in there. I guess some people in real life kidnapped Steve Wynn's daughter. Steve Wynn is a Vegas tycoon or whatever.
Yes.
Owns casinos.
He owns some very nice casinos, hotels.
They kidnapped his daughter, and he paid a ransom, and they were arrested because they bought a sports car for $100,000 in cash, which is why Andy Garcia's character makes that little phrase. It's like, don't disappoint me by being caught this way, because I want to catch you myself. Yeah, so notes, thoughts? Did Jesse watch this?
He did.
And had he seen it before?
No.
And what did he think?
He thought it was decent.
That's what I think. I think this is a decent movie. Yeah. This is a movie that was not intended to make you think. It was intended to entertain you. The whole point of this movie was to see all these leading characters, leading actors in the same place.
I'm looking at IMDb at the sequels, and I'm looking at Ocean's 8, and I'm a little...
Are you not familiar with Ocean's 8?
I am not.
It's the chick Ocean's 8.
Yeah, I have some mixed feelings. And again, it's not that I'm not all about a chick movie. I'm pro chick movie. Just this combination of chicks, I don't know.
Oh, it's wild. Rihanna, right? And Kate Blanchett and Sandra Bullock. Off the top of my head.
Kate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Mindy Kaling, yes. Sarah Paulson.
Uh-huh.
Awkwafina.
Yes.
I don't even know who that is. And Helena Bonham Carter.
Yes. And Rihanna, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's a great choice. Those are some kick-ass chicks.
Okay. Also, though, why did they rename her Debbie Ocean? Why couldn't she still be Danny Ocean?
Is it a reboot or is it a...
I have no idea. I really don't know anything about it.
I want to say she may be related to Danny.
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't know enough about it.
Because there's a parole board. So, I mean...
Oh, maybe it is just a reboot.
Except it's set in New York, so...
Well, this is New Jersey, New York. Yeah. What do you... Hey, we're working here. God.
Oh, wow. That was spectacular.
Not great, yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'll watch it. Don't get me wrong. I'll watch it for Sarah Paulson alone. I mean,
absolutely.
Seriously.
Sandra Bullock has always got my money.
Not that everybody, I mean, again, it looks like a great cast. I'm just so conflicted because I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll have to add it to the list at some point. At some point when we want a fun movie. That's why I think this fits the bill of a fun movie. We don't even have to talk about too much because it's just fun.
Yeah. Well, and because it's a heist movie, there isn't a lot to talk about because the plot is... only enough to string together this series of events.
Yeah.
So, which is, I guess, good storytelling in the movie. But it had some great visuals. It had some acrobatics. It had some pretty funny one-liners.
Oh, yeah. It had all the cars.
Yeah. It had all the cars.
All the cars, all the cameos.
Yeah.
All the little Vegas things I'm sure I didn't even get. They had lots of nods to Vegas.
The one thing, though, that got me, like, Tess is just magically all forgiving at the end of the movie.
Yes.
She just gets over it. Like, she's suddenly, oh, Danny. It's like, really? You were pissed at, and you were hanging out with this other guy, so much so that you just instantly, without much hesitation, you're just back.
I kept thinking Tess was going to be part of it.
I was actually thinking that, too.
And yet, evidently not. Yeah. So, what's your grade? 32 minutes into it.
I'll give this is an A movie.
Yeah, I might call it an A minus if it were.
Yeah,
I were
doing A minus. That's fair. Again, it wasn't sneakers, but I was entertained. I didn't fall asleep, and I would, you know, I probably watch it again. But I will definitely, I'm definitely interested enough to watch the sequels. So yeah. I think that's. That's the good mark.
It had good heisty, fun, driving music. It was certainly a shot in the arm for a little less conversation, which is a really catchy but ridiculous song. So, any other notes? Go on to housekeeping.
I do not. Let's see. Topher Grace. We discussed about Brad Pitt eating. No, not really. I don't have anything else.
I mean, there's just lots of like in this movie. I say, you know what? You guys go watch this movie. It'll be interesting to see what Drew thinks, but really, yeah, it's fine. And this movie, like I said, doesn't really require you to think too much.
Well, yes. It's true. It wasn't a thinky movie, but there was still enough dialogue that I was kept interested. But there was also enough action, even though it was silly action and, you know, premise of an electromagnetic pulse that would probably actually kill people. But
yeah, well, like little things like Don Cheadle putting his hand over his groin.
Yeah,
that was a character choice.
That's crawling out of a pile of shit.
Oh yes, that was fun.
But you know, Jesse actually did. Lament is like, why does he have that accent? Why did he choose? Like, why? You know who that is, right? I'm like, yes, I know who it is. Why? Why would he pick that? I'm like, I can't tell you why.
It's possible it has something to do with the first movie.
That's what I was speculating. It was probably homage. But having not seen the first movie, I don't know. But I'm certainly going to endeavor to see the first movie, which is, again, I think, a good endorsement of this movie. It makes me want to see the original to compare and contrast.
Yes, I agree. So,
but not on the same pod.
So before we get on to housekeeping, so our friends at the United Nations of Horror, particularly Becky, she is not just a fan of horror movies or a fan of cinema in general, but she's actually a cinema scholar and author. And she has a new book coming out. House of Leaves Publishing has a collection of writing exploring the cultural history of religion and horror cinema called Scared Sacred: Idolatry, Religion, and Worship in the Horror Film. Now, they bring together leading film critics, historians, and writers, and it includes an introduction by author and theologian Professor Douglas E. Cowan, and a foreword from actor and author Doug Bradley. Now, we would know Doug Bradley as Pinhead in the Hellraiser movies.
Oh, yeah.
He is a great voice, though. If you ever listen to audio, he has a selection of books where he reads classic horror stories, and he's got a great voice for it. But getting back to the promo for this, Scared Sacred is due for release early 2019, and they have a crowdfunding campaign through Indiegogo that is going to allow supporters to pre-order a first edition copy of the book. The first edition run is limited to 1,000 copies and only 100 copies of the hardback edition. The hardback edition includes an alternative cover foiled in copper, and the paperback edition cover is foiled in silver. Each book will be accompanied by a numbered certificate. So if you visit www.holpublishing.com, that's House of Leaves Publishing, for the link to the pre-order and further information, you can order this fantastic book. Now, I've ordered mine, and the reason why Becky reached out to say have us do this little promo is because Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast, actually bought a book with the Indiegogo campaign to support them. Because I believe in supporting the arts, especially arts of people that whose art I already enjoy, like fellow podcasters. So, two things. For Americans, it's actually kind of expensive because it's all in pounds and there's shipping costs and stuff. But I say, you know what? Support the arts, especially if you like horror cinema and you have thoughts about religion and horror. Think Exorcist, think Hellraiser. Think any of a number of different horror/religion subjects. And there's going to be a scholarly thought. Also, if you go to holpublishing.com, you can see the video trailer that gives you a little taste of what you're getting.
I watched it.
And what did you think?
It's an interesting premise. It whet my appetite, as it were. So.
Okay. Well, you're not really a horror fan.
Well, being I'm not a big horror fan, it was intriguing from a concept level. So it may be something I read out of an interest just so that I can get more understanding. But yeah, I'm not a big horror guy. So because I scare easily. So
yeah, well, and maybe that's because of some of your religious upbringing. Although to be fair, the Anderson family doesn't have a very deep religious upbringing. Like, we have, like, Father Anderson turns out to be a fairly religious guy. And we went to some churches as a kid, but I certainly was not given a full religious indoctrination.
No, my religion's pretty much the Beatles at this point.
Yeah, well, there's worse.
Well, they've got John and Paul. I mean, who else do you need?
Well, exactly. Okay, so the Becky I was referring to is that the book itself, again, Scared Sacred, is edited by Rebecca Booth, Aaron Thompson, and R.F. Todd. So at least one of those people I like the work of, and that's Rebecca Booth. She's fantastic, and she's one of the hosts of United Nations of Horror, a podcast that I've wanted to contribute to since they've been around. In fact, we recorded something for them already, and we didn't send it, and I think I'm going to have to send it, because now the time is any. They probably have, upwards, I don't even know how many episodes they've had, but it's been well over a year, I think, and they crank the stuff out. They're very knowledgeable, and it's a fun conversation that they have. They dig deeper into the genre than, of course, we do, because we are fucking all over the place.
That must makes us so jaunty jolly.
Yeah. So, Scared Sacred, it's got a great cover. In fact, if you order in the Indiegogo, sorry, it's not ordering. If you support them on their Indiegogo campaign, there's some levels where you can get some really cool posters and stuff, too.
Is Indiegogo like...
It's like Kickstarter. Like,
okay, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, well, okay, and unlike Kickstarter, where you have to gain a certain amount, and then it's funded, but if you don't, it's not funded. Indiegogo is will allow you to still support them, and if they don't make their total goal, they can still use what they get to do what they can. That makes sense?
So you could potentially contribute and not get anything.
Well, okay. As someone who has supported Kickstarter things that have gotten nothing, I'll just point out that is eligible everywhere. But what I'm saying is that if their goal is $100,000, which in this case it is not, but if it was, and they only get $50,000, they don't stop the campaign and give everybody their money back. They actually call it a success with $50,000.
Gotcha. So it sounds worthwhile then.
Yeah. I mean, you're supporting the arts, so...
Which is important in these days and times.
It is, yes, in these troubled times around the globe, because these people are primarily in the UK, if not completely in the UK.
Yeah, well, we're going to need them when we implode into a big pile of ashes.
What little I know about UK or British politics, I think we might need each other.
Who would have thought the Germans were the sensible ones?
Oh my God, yes. Scared Sacred. And she has already written a book on, she wrote a book on the story and then the eventual movie of The Devil Rides Out.
Huh.
Again, scholarly work. And if you can make a living, which I hope she is, if you can make a living writing anything, I think that's great.
That's impressive. And
certainly writing about genre film, it's way impressive, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would consider that something of a dream.
Yeah.
Anyway, housekeeping.
Making plans for Christmas, which is bewildering.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got to figure out how to, you got to figure your calendar a little bit out. So to see when we can record, and we should have enough stockpiled that we could take some time off, but I know we want to record all together at some point, but we could do a whole bunch of weird stuff too.
No, we could. Absolutely. We could do remotes.
Or we could go to a movie, watch the movie, and then go to some place and record afterward.
Yeah, we could.
That'd
be fun.
We could take a road trip where we go to a movie and talk in the car on the way, and then talk in the car on the way home.
I don't know that our audio quality would be really good in the car, though.
No, it'd be fine. We could do it.
I'm open to all kinds of suggestions. The parental units have been panicking because when they realize that we're going to be there for 3 weeks, dad said, well, I don't have that much time off. I'm going to rearrange my vacation time. And I said, no. We are going to plan some things independently. So keep working, just stay working, because there's going to be plenty of days where we're going to have stuff on our own. So don't worry about it. So
okay.
So we'll work around whatever we need to work around. I'm trying to coordinate something with everybody because mom really wants a strong desire to have everybody come over to the house because she wants to see people.
Yeah, like Bree and
yeah,
yeah.
So I'm not sure how that's going to work or timing wise, but I made sure that it was really inclusive and all encompassing. So, you know, spouses, kids, offspring, whatever, you know, bring whoever, siblings, I don't care. So, yeah, no, I'm just planning Christmas. So that's a little daunting. I just went through a round of employee performance reviews. So that's fun.
Otherwise, things have been great. We got on one hand, it's great because Journey got all of her birthday presents from us a month and a half ahead because we went on and got her a loft bed that has a desk underneath.
Oh, nice.
That's that she's a little here and there about climbing on a ladder to get into her bed. But you know, after a little bit up and down, she's fine. And it gives her room. It's so much more practical. Because she had a full-size bed that just took up the whole room.
Yeah.
So now she's got a twin bed that's sitting basically on top of two dressers.
She's moved into a loft.
Yeah, she has, yes.
Yeah. She's moving up in the world. To the east side.
Literally.
That deluxe apartment in the sky, hi. Moving on up.
Fish don't fry in the kitchen and beans don't burn on the grill. It took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill.
Trying.
Yes. Yeah. Now we're up in the big leagues.
Well, we have devolved.
This guess is it's this our is, turn at bat.
Brother Drew, see, don't you miss this?
No. You know, I've been watching in the morning on MeTV or whatever, they play Different Strokes.
MeTV.
MeTV, Antenna TV, Get TV, all these little TV stations that play old TV shows.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, we're still corded. We're still, we didn't cut our cable yet.
I still have yet to watch Johnny Carson. I know it's there. I'm afraid to start watching.
You should be afraid. I think it's really hit and miss.
No, here's the thing though. I'm so nostalgic for it, I won't care. But I will watch it ad nauseum is the problem.
Oh, okay, well, you find yourself. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, because we've probably discussed before. I'm sure we have because I have a big mouth and
doesn't matter. Keep going.
But I have an irreverent love for Johnny Carson. He is to me the single best example of the late night talk show genre.
I would argue that you have a reverent love for him, actually. I believe you revere the man.
I do. That you are correct. I revere him, even though he's no longer with us.
Say you idolize him.
Yeah.
He may be your not scared sacred.
That was a very nice callback. But I remember growing up watching Johnny Carson on the little black and white TV in my bedroom, watching it when I should have been sleeping. But I was fascinated because he made me laugh, but also he got people to talk in ways that I think doesn't happen a lot anymore. There's a lot more, things are much more scripted and or much more, people are much more cautious about what they say.
I think so, yes.
So some of that's culture and some of that's the prism of time, but some of it was Johnny Carson just had a way about him. And so I was never a big Jay Leno fan. I was a huge Conan O'Brien fan when he took over. I was sad to see him leave the network and go on, but I made my friend Jesse, much to his chagrin, I got on a YouTube jag. And we were watching Craig Ferguson clips from the Late Late Show. And I just kept saying, I miss Craig Ferguson so much. I'm so sad that he's no longer on TV because his show was amazing and awesome. And I think people just didn't know that it existed enough. And that's a shame. So
he'll come around again.
Way to be a downer. So.
No, it's okay. So anyway, sorry, I was getting to Different Strokes. I think I mentioned before that it does not hold up.
What you talking about, Willis?
Exactly. It's really not great. Although it's part of my childhood, you know?
I don't think it was great then, though.
It was very heavy-handed, which may be just the type, you know, the time.
Well, what else was on TV at that time?
Well,
realistically.
Yeah. But
Facts of Life?
Well, that was a spinoff.
That's what I'm saying.
like, I think Alan Thicke wrote the theme song.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Because the lyrics are, well, the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some. A man is born, he's a man of means. Then along come two, they got nothing but their genes. They got different strokes. It takes different strokes. It takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. Anyway, I think that's an Alan Thicke original. You'll have to look that up. Fact check it for me if you can.
I will be happy to take this little brief intro. I just remember, I think, what, Edie McClure, is she in it? So
no, yeah. Caroline Ray was Mrs. Garrett. But they had the other...
No, I'm pretty sure they had Edie McClure, too, though, at some point.
Well, Edie McClure was a... I don't know.
She's like the cook.
I thought Mrs. Garrett was the housekeeper. Who knows? I'm sure.
The housekeeper, but they had a cook, too, so...
Okay, well, maybe. Oh. I saw some silver spoons. Also, does not hold up really
bad. Oh, yeah, no. Ricky Schroeder. Holy...
Just not... It's like... It's kind of like... Yeah, not good.
Composer Alan Thicke, Gloria Loring, Al Burton, Jean LaSalle, and Tom Smith.
Huh.
Gloria Loring and Alan Thicke did a duet.
Who's Gloria Loring?
I don't know. I want to say she was a soap opera singer, but I don't think that's right. Oh, nope, she was a soap opera person. She was Liz Chandler on Days of Our Lives. Holy God, nope, how did I know that? Good Lord. What is wrong with my brain?
Nope. It's, yeah. Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Well, Edie McClurg was on Different Strokes, but it just says she was a voice only? I don't know.
Maybe. There was another old lady who was the housekeeper before Caroline Ray, I think. Not Caroline Ray.
Charlotte Ray.
Charlotte Ray.
Caroline Ray, that would have been very different.
Caroline Ray is a whole different thing.
God, all those shows, just so bad. What's happening?
Because I put up Kelly. Oh, you know what else I got in the mail today? Monkey Bone.
Monkey Bone?
Yeah, we can talk about the movie Monkey Bone. I believe that's a Chris Kattan, Brendan Fraser vehicle.
Oh, no. Why? Why would we talk about that?
I don't know, because it's bizarre.
What? But. No, Brendan Fraser, no. Uh-uh.
Brendan Fraser was like the best of those kind of guys. Like
Encino Man?
Well, okay, maybe that's not a great example, but he was really great in the Mummy movies. I think I saw Blast from the Past, he was pretty good.
Should we throw in some Pauly Shore movies while we're at it?
We could.
No. I was not even being serious.
Well, you know, his mother just died recently, so.
Oh, did Mitzi Shore die?
She did, yes.
Aw, well, that's too bad.
Yeah, par went out for Mitzi. That's all. I have no direct knowledge of any of these people. I mean, she was a legend in the comedy community in L.A.
Yeah.
Not always a force of good, but, you know.
I was going to say, she didn't have the greatest reputation, but who am I to judge?
Yeah, exactly. I think she told, she's the one who told, Ned to change his name to Carlos Mencia and claimed to be Mexican instead of Guatemalan or Honduran.
Oh, really?
Yep. I think she also told Maz Jobrani he'd do better if he carried a basket full of snakes.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Well,
But again, she owned a club. She could do whatever she wants.
So you're saying that perhaps she and Roseanne Barr could have started a new comedy club, Renaissance.
I want to say, did Roseanne start at the...
That wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise you to find that out?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I also don't care.
But, you know, the future of the presidency could rest in the hands of Tom Arnold, so... Although, does anybody really care about tapes anymore? I mean, we could have tapes of the president peeing on prostitutes, which, by the way, is not what he's accused of, and calling black people the N-word while firing a gun off. And he would still get to pick Supreme Court nominees.
Yes. He would get defended by the fringe right.
Yeah, because they like that honesty.
Yes. Yeah, I can tell you. Well, not, I can't. No, I can't tell you on the record. But I.
Should we stop recording?
Are
we?
No. I'll tell you my horrifically horrible, terrible, god awful medical malady story. No, not medical malady. Medical billing problem story, and then we can go off the record.
Okay.
So, advice to anybody: do not allow your healthcare provider to scare you into prepaying your copay in lieu of service for some kind of surgical procedure. And I'll explain this.
I was going to say, because you can't get out of a doctor's office without paying your copay for the visit.
No, but I had surgery on my knee. And when I checked in, they said, you need to pay your copay, by the way, which was $1,300. And I said, last time you billed me. And they said, no, we need you to pay up front. And I said, okay, but we don't know all the charges yet because I haven't had the surgery and you don't know how long I'm going to be in the ER and the OR and how much. I mean, I don't understand. How are you charging me for something that hasn't even happened yet? You know, it's not like an office visit where I'm going to see the doctor and there's going to be an hour.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of moving parts for that. But so they gave me some charge. It was $1,300. And of course, I was having surgery that day. So it wasn't like I wanted to dicker with them because I was afraid they would say,
have canceled you?
Well, that was the threat. That was the implied threat. They wouldn't give me an answer. So I paid it because I did not want to have surgery because I had to have surgery because if I didn't, my leave wouldn't have been approved at work. So it was like this whole cascade of things. And I scheduled time off and I'd arranged, you know, boyfriend Jesse took me. And anyway, there was multiple hoops that I had to jump through. So paid $1,300. So I pay with my health savings card. Now, my health savings card, I have to substantiate when I make a payment, because they say, yes. Hey, you got to prove where this $1,300 went, because we don't know. Yeah, we see that it says it went to the hospital, but we don't. You could have bought popsicles at the hospital for all we know. So you have to give us substantiation of that money you spent. So I go to the insurance company, and the insurance company says, "Well, we're billing it, so you're going to have to wait a month." So it takes a month. So I wait a month and I call and they said, well, we haven't gotten all the bills from the hospital yet, so we can't bill it. And I said, well, I don't understand. It's been a month. Yeah, the hospital hasn't sent us everything, so we can't close the claim. And I said, but it's okay. I don't understand. Like, and by the way, I do this for a living. So yeah. I know what I'm doing. So I call the hospital and I say, you know, I need to know what's going on. They said, oh no, we sent it to the insurance company. They just haven't sent it back. So I call the insurance company. So I do this back and forth for like 3 weeks. And then finally, there was some error. And they finally said, well, we'll push it through again. So month two, and my health savings administrator has turned my card off now. I can no longer use my card, which with has
your money on it.
Yes. With $1,000. Yes. With $1,000 on it. I can no longer pay for anything. I can't pay my copays. I can't pick up my medications and pay for my...
And this is money you put on your health card. For people outside the United States, you take your money out of your paycheck and put it in your health card.
Yeah, this is out of my... I've already paid. It's out of my pocket.
Yes.
So I am out the money. And in addition to that, I have to pay again out of my pocket to if anything comes in. So I've got bills from like my eyeglass place sent me a bill. It wasn't much, but still that came directly out of my own pocket. So I call back and they said, oh, well, the problem was, I call the hospital. The problem was, is when we sent it to your insurance said, oh, wait, you've hit the maximum out of pocket. So we need to send it back to you because you have to readjust everything. And then, you know, you're going to have to adjust the rest of it because there's no copay to the client. And when that happens, it changes the rate at which they charge you. because it's all voodoo. So, go back to the hospital, they rebill it. They have now sent me a statement that shows that my bill is $700 less than what I paid.
So are they going to write you a check?
Well...
Oh, they can't, because it went on the health savings card.
So I said, I called the hospital and I said, what's going on? They said, well, we'll just apply it to your account. No, you're not applying this to my account. You're refunding me this money. You don't understand. You made me pay this in advance. You owe me this money back. No. Well, just put it on your account if you have any future charges. You don't understand. I am not going to have any more charges with you people. I am done. Exactly, like, I am not coming back. You're not getting any more of my damn money. So another month goes by. Month three, by the way, now. So it is now 3 months post-surgery. So June was surgery. September. Right? September 6th.
Yes.
Still not fixed. Yesterday, I spent an hour and a half on the phone because when I finally got the statement from the hospital, they still owe me $12.89. And there is nowhere I can find a $12.89 charge. So my health savings account, people are like, you don't have substantiation. You're stuck. You have to get that. So either I have to write my own insurance company a check for $12.89, which is what I'm probably going to do anyway, because I'm tired of this.
It's not worth fighting.
I've already spent so much time on the phone.
Oh, I know. Like,
it's ridiculous. And here's the thing. I do this for a living. I deal with insurance companies for a living. I deal with hospitals. I deal with drug companies. I deal with billing. I deal with third parties. I know what I'm doing. And I can't imagine what it would be like for somebody who doesn't speak English very well or doesn't understand the culture or hasn't been in the country that long. Like, it would be impossible.
Yeah, but that's similar to how people who go to buy cars, like a used car at a used car lot, people who don't speak English very well can end up paying like 26% interest.
Just insane. So... I was very frustrated. They said that, so they finally refunded my card back, like $700. I'm still $12 off, and I'm like, I told the administrator, the plan administrator, and I have a name of somebody. I talk to her every time I call now, and she laughs, and she says, yeah, this is terrible. I'm sorry they did that to you. I said, yeah, but you're not so sorry you're going to forgive my $12. So finally, I think I said, I'm just going to write a check. She said, don't do that. Don't let them win. I'm like, don't let them. You're part of this problem, lady.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't. I can't go to Walgreens and buy sinus medication on my health savings card because I owe you fucking $12.
Yeah. So it was just so frustrating. So the moral of the story, long story short, too late. I know. Do not allow them to charge you prepay for surgery.
And now could they have said no?
They couldn't have. Because it wasn't a set procedure or a visit. It was a full scale procedure that was unknown.
Because and it was pre-approved.
It was pre-approved. My insurance approved it.
So they were going to pay it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes. And so basically the insurance company wouldn't. The insurance company didn't know I was going to meet the limit and couldn't have speculated that I was going to meet the limit because they would have no idea how much the hospital was actually going to charge them. Because if the insurance company had, they would have said, oh no, he's going to meet his max out of pocket, $700 in, and then it's all you.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Joe.